Chapter 21. Windows and doors are squarely indicated, and one figure, a beggar of course, is seen walking off by itself into illimitable perspective. Not so Leghorn, made illustrious by Smollett's grave, which is a thriving, business-like, matter-of-fact place, where idleness is shouldered out of the way by commerce. The regulations observed there, in reference to trade and merchants, are very liberal and free, and the town, of course, benefits by them. Leghorn had a bad name in connection with stabbers, and with some justice it must be allowed. For, not many years ago, there was an assassination club there, the members of which bore no ill will to anybody in particular, but stabbed people, quite strangers to them, in the streets at night, for the pleasure and excitement of the recreation. I think the president of this amiable society was a shoemaker. He was taken, however, and the club was broken up. It would, probably, have disappeared in the natural course of events, before the railroad between Leghorn and Pisa, which is a good one, and has already begun to astonish Italy with a precedent of punctuality, order, plain dealing, and improvement, the most dangerous and heretical astonisher of all. There must have been a slight sensation, as of earthquake, surely, in the Vatican, when the first Italian railroad was thrown open. Returning to Pisa, and hiring a good-tempered Vetturino, and his four horses, to take us on to Rome, we traveled through pleasant Tuscan villages and cheerful scenery all day. The roadside crosses in this part of Italy are numerous and curious. There is seldom a figure on the cross, though there is sometimes a face, but they are remarkable for being garnished with little models in wood, of every possible object, that can be connected with the Savior's death. The cock that crowed, when Peter had denied his master thrice, is usually perched on the tip-top, and an ornithological phenomenon he generally is. Under him, is the inscription. Then, hung onto the crossbeam, are the spear, the reed with the sponge of vinegar and water at the end, the coat without seam for which the soldiers cast lots, the dice box with which they threw for it, the hammer that drove in the nails, the pincers that pulled them out, the ladder which was set against the cross, the crown of thorns, the instrument of flagellation, the lanthorn with which Mary went to the tomb, I suppose, and the sword with which Peter smote the servant of the high priest, a perfect toy shop of little objects, repeated at every 4 or 5 miles, all along the highway. On the evening of the second day from Pisa, we reached the beautiful old city of Siena. There was what they called a carnival, in progress. But, as its secret lay in a score or two of melancholy people walking up and down the principal street in common toy shop masks, and being more melancholy, if possible, than the same sort of people in England, I say no more of it. We went off, bedums next morning, to see the cathedral, which is wonderfully picturesque inside and out, especially the latter, also the marketplace, or great piazza, which is a large square, with a great broken-nosed fountain in it, some quaint Gothic houses, and a high square brick tower, outside the top of which a curious feature in such views in Italy hangs an enormous bell. It is like a bit of Venice, without the water. There are some curious old palazzi in the town, which is very ancient, and without having, for me, the interest of Verona or Genoa, it is very dreamy and fantastic, and most interesting. We went on again, as soon as we had seen these things, and going over a rather bleak country, there had been nothing but vines until now. Mere walking sticks at that season of the year, stopped, as usual, between 1 and 2 hours in the middle of the day, to rest the horses, that being a part of every Vetturino contract. We then went on again, through a region gradually becoming bleaker and wilder, until it became as bare and desolate as any Scottish moors. Soon after dark, we halted for the night, at the Osteria of La Scala. A perfectly lone house, where the family were sitting round a great fire in the kitchen, raised on a stone platform 3 or 4 feet high, and big enough for the roasting of an ox, On the upper, and only other floor of this hotel, there was a great, wild, rambling sala, with one very little window in a by corner, and four black doors opening into four black bedrooms in various directions. To say nothing of another large black door, opening into another large black sala, with the staircase coming abruptly through a kind of trapdoor in the floor, and the rafters of the roof looming above. A suspicious little press skulking in one obscure corner. And all the knives in the house lying about in various directions. The fireplace was of the purest Italian architecture, so that it was perfectly impossible to see it for the smoke. The waitress was like a dramatic brigand's wife, and wore the same style of dress upon her head. The dogs barked like mad. The echoes returned the compliments bestowed upon them. There was not another house within 12 miles, and things had a dreary, and rather a cutthroat, appearance. They were not improved by rumors of robbers having come out, strong and boldly, within a few nights, and of their having stopped the mail very near that place. They were known to have waylaid some travelers not long before, on Mount Vesuvius itself, and were the talk at all the roadside inns. As they were no business of ours, however, for we had very little with us to lose, we made ourselves merry on the subject, and were very soon as comfortable as need be. We had the usual dinner in this solitary house, and a very good dinner it is, when you are used to it. There is something with a vegetable, or some rice in it which is a sort of shorthand or arbitrary character for soup, and which tastes very well, when you have flavored it with plenty of grated cheese, lots of salt, and abundance of pepper. There is the half-fowl of which this soup has been made. There is a stewed pigeon, with the gizzards and livers of himself, and other birds stuck all round him. There is a bit of roast beef, the size of a small French roll. There are a scrap of Parmesan cheese, and 5 little withered apples, all huddled together on a small plate, and crowding one upon the other, as if each were trying to save itself from the chance of being eaten. Then there is coffee, and then there is bed. You don't mind brick floors, you don't mind yawning doors, nor banging windows, you don't mind your own horses being stabled under the bed. And so close, that every time a horse coughs or sneezes, he wakes you. If you are good-humored to the people about you, and speak pleasantly, and look cheerful, take my word for it, you may be well entertained in the very worst Italian inn, and always in the most obliging manner, and may go from one end of the country to the other, despite all stories to the contrary, without any great trial of your patience anywhere. Especially, when you get such wine in flasks, as the Orvieto, and the Monte Pulcino. It was a bad morning when we left this place, and we went, for 12 miles, over a country as barren, as stony, and as wild, as Cornwall in England, until we came to Radicofani, where there is a ghostly, goblin inn. Once a hunting seat, belonging to the Dukes of Tuscany. It is full of such rambling corridors, and gaunt rooms, that all the murdering and phantom tales that ever were written might have originated in that one house. There are some horrible old palazzi in Genoa. One in particular, not unlike it, outside. But there is a winding, creaking, wormy, rustling, door opening, foot on staircase falling character about this Radicofani hotel, such as I never saw anywhere else. The town, such as it is, hangs on a hillside above the house, and in front of it. The inhabitants are all beggars, and as soon as they see a carriage coming, they swoop down upon it, like so many birds of prey. When we got on the mountain pass, which lies beyond this place, the wind, as they had forewarned us at the inn, was so terrific, that we were obliged to take my other half out of the carriage, lest she should be blown over, carriage and all, and to hang to it, on the windy side, as well as we could for laughing, to prevent its going, heaven knows where. For mere force of wind, this land storm might have competed with an Atlantic gale, and had a reasonable chance of coming off victorious. The blast came sweeping down great gullies, in a range of mountains on the right. so that we looked with positive awe at a great morass on the left, and saw that there was not a bush or twig to hold by. It seemed as if, once blown from our feet, we must be swept out to sea, or away into space. There was snow, and hail, and rain, and lightning, and thunder, and there were rolling mists, traveling with incredible velocity. It was dark, awful, and solitary to the last degree. There were mountains above mountains, veiled in angry clouds, and there was such a wrathful, rapid, violent, tumultuous hurry everywhere, as rendered the scene unspeakably exciting and grand. It was a relief to get out of it, notwithstanding, and to cross even the dismal, dirty papal frontier. After passing through two little towns, in one of which, Aquapendant, there was also a carnival in progress, consisting of one man dressed and damasked as a woman, and one woman dressed and damasked as a man, walking ankle-deep through the muddy streets, in a very melancholy manner. We came, at dusk, within sight of the lake of Bolsena, on whose bank there is a little town of the same name, much celebrated for malaria. With the exception of this poor place, there is not a cottage on the banks of the lake, or near it, for nobody dare sleep there, not a boat upon its waters, not a stick or stake to break the dismal monotony of 27 watery miles. We were late in getting in, the roads being very bad from heavy rains, and, after dark, the dullness of the scene was quite intolerable. We entered on a very different, and a finer scene of desolation, next night, at sunset. We had passed through Montefiacin, famous for its wine, and Viterbo for its fountains, and after climbing up a long hill of 8 or 10 miles extent, came suddenly upon the margin of a solitary lake, in one part very beautiful, with a luxuriant wood, in another, very barren, and shut in by bleak volcanic hills. Where this lake flows, there stood, of old, a city. It was swallowed up one day, and in its stead, this water rose. There are ancient traditions, common to many parts of the world, of the ruined city having been seen below, when the water was clear, but however that may be, from this spot of earth it vanished. The ground came bubbling up above it, and the water too, and here they stand, like ghosts on whom the other world closed suddenly, and who have no means of getting back again. They seem to be waiting the course of ages, for the next earthquake in that place, when they will plunge below the ground, at its first yawning, and be seen no more. The unhappy city below, is not more lost and dreary, than these fire-charred hills and the stagnant water, above. The red sun looked strangely on them, as with the knowledge, that they were made for caverns and darkness. And the melancholy water oozed, and sucked the mud, and crept quietly among the marshy grass and reeds, as if the overthrow of all the ancient towers and housetops, and the death of all the ancient people born and bred there, were yet heavy on its conscience. A short ride from this lake brought us to Ronciglian, a little town like a large pigsty, where we passed the night. Next morning at 7 o'clock, we started for Rome. As soon as we were out of the pigsty, we entered on the Campagna Romana, an undulating flat, as you know, where few people can live, and where, for miles and miles, there is nothing to relieve the terrible monotony and gloom. Of all kinds of country that could, by possibility, lie outside the gates of Rome, this is the aptest and fittest burial ground for the dead city. So sad, so quiet, so sullen, so secret in its covering up of great masses of ruin, and hiding them, so like the waste places into which the men possessed with devils used to go and howl, and rend themselves, in the old days of Jerusalem. We had to traverse 30 miles of this Campagna, and for 22 we went on, seeing nothing but now and then a lonely house, or a villainous-looking shepherd, with matted hair all over his face, and himself wrapped to the chin in a frozy brown mantle, tending his sheep. At the end of that distance, we stopped to refresh the horses and to get some lunch in a common malaria-shaken, despondent little public house, whose every inch of wall and beam, inside, was, according to custom, painted and decorated in a way so miserable that every room looked like the wrong side of another room, and, with its wretched imitation of drapery and lopsided little daubs of lyres, seemed to have been plundered from behind the scenes of some traveling circus. When we were fairly going off again, we began, in a perfect fever, to strain our eyes for Rome. And when, after another mile or two, the eternal city appeared, at length, in the distance, it looked like I am half afraid to write the word like London. There it lay, under a thick cloud, with innumerable towers, and steeples, and roofs of houses, rising up into the sky, and high above them all, one dome. I swear, that keenly as I felt the seeming absurdity of the comparison, it was so like London, at that distance, that if you could have shown it me, in a glass, I should have taken it for nothing else. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.